Chapter 7. John. The Unexpected Effect Job. He'd gone into the MSF to help people. He wanted to help people get better. He wanted to fight for something, and Moriarty had been right. He'd tried 3 times to join the army before settling on the MSF as another way to go about it. His new life was wonderfully unreal, full of adventure and excitement. Near as John could tell, what Leverage Inc. did was commit crimes, to help people with a side goal of exposing Moriarty as the complete and utter prat that he was. Well, Sherlock also seemed to do it because it was fun, and he was bored. Near as John could tell, there was one moment that summed it all up. John said, "Oh, you're Robin Hood." Sherlock looked at him from the corners of his eyes, from where he was drilling through a variety of locks with an acid drip. "No, I'm Sherlock Holmes." Mycroft steepled his hands and said, "That is not a precise analogy." The way he smiled afterwards implied that, no, really, it wasn't a very good analogy. However, anyone looking at the surface was welcome to think that. Molly leaned back in her chair and smiled with every fiber of her being. "Yeah, I like to think that. It's like we're part of a universal demiurge of chaotic good that exists in a liminal space to combat the forces of entropic chaotic evil." At Sherlock and Mycroft's looks, she flushed. "I mean, yeah, I guess. I haven't really thought about it." Irene laughed. "As long as I don't have to live in the woods, I hate camping." She winked at Molly, who blushed then for a completely different reason. Jobs, as they called them, went something like this. Mycroft would research and select something, or someone who needed their unique assistance, or would provide a chink in Moriarty's web of crime, based on his frankly quite terrifying to think about Mycroftian criteria. Or Sherlock would sprawl on the conference table and declare that he was so bored that the force of his boredom was about to cause the planet to collapse. Well, that went on until John told Mycroft to buy the place a couch. For somewhere where they all spent an enormous amount of time, and Sherlock even lived in, there was very little useful furniture. That shifted the location of Sherlock's boredom. John wasn't about to sit on the table. On a couch, he could sit next to Sherlock, with Sherlock's feet in his lap. He could look through headlines and suggest, "How about this one?" Generally, he was shot down by Mycroft for being not precisely something we can assist with, John, or shot down by Sherlock for being a moron, followed by, "There's nothing interesting left in the world." But John hadn't gotten through med school as an Omega, and then gone on to work in places death, famine, plague, and war had done their best to destroy by having a thin skin. Although some days he felt his skin thinning, his lips cracked on his smile. Mycroft would watch him when he smiled those smiles. Irene's eyes were on him, too. John went to the loo before Sherlock opened his eyes on boredom. When he washed his hands, there'd be a job to begin. In any case, there was a presentation on large monitors. Mycroft and Sherlock argued either psychically or in very obscure terms as to what they were going to do. Mycroft would say, "Ah, you want to do an Albigensian crusade." Sherlock would say, "Yes, but with a lost child variant." Well, his tone implied that by missing the last bit, Mycroft couldn't have been more wrong. Then there would be crime and a sobbingly happy person thanking them after the crime. In between, Sherlock was always dragging him off to do things. Almost never medical things. Although, quite often, they had to do with shooting things. Sherlock seemed to greatly enjoy watching John at target practice. He gave John a holster for his revolver. John rubbed the interior with Vaseline and graphite to make it easier to draw. He generally had to draw it quite quickly. Sherlock mostly sent John to do things for which he was completely unqualified, and then told him how he'd done it wrong. It was actually a bit not good, really, because John loved it. He loved helping people. He loved doing things. He loved the weirdly exciting life he was living. On the hydraulic thumb job, Mycroft connected laundering counterfeit currency to the purchase of forged paintings connected to Moriarty's network, which had resulted in a young engineer losing his thumb. Irene charmed the CEO of Lysander Engineering with the Nobel she didn't have. Sherlock slipped the Alpha's passkey from his pocket so he could do a scraping for metallic deposits. After he got out of a skip, John waited with Molly and Bessie, the van. Bessie was a very nice van. It was full of things that, under no circumstances, John was allowed to touch. Molly looked pained when he'd asked her what a router was. He shouldn't have felt flattened to wait in the van. He had absolutely no reason to feel dull about it at all. Nothing to feel hacked off about. On the Greek interpreter job, which John found, and Sherlock declared not dull, and Mycroft said, "Fine, if you must." He and Sherlock had raced through the streets following people pretending to be superheroes. There was a webcomic about them after that. Molly printed it out for John. Mycroft watched him while he smiled over it. "Something to read the children." John snapped, "That's not funny." He had the comic laminated. On the barrel dodge coronet job, John wasn't entirely certain what was happening, but he spent the larger portion of uncertainty in the van with Molly. She sighed. "Aren't they gorgeous?" She glanced at John. "Not that you and Sherlock aren't, I mean, he only leaves you behind in the jobs when Irene makes him. I don't mean... John swallowed down any dull that he had no right to feel and leaned back, and then jumped forward at Molly's squeak of, don't touch that!" Molly patted the flashing device. "He didn't mean to hurt you, baby." John sighed. He sat very straight. He watched Sherlock and Irene drape all over each other and look amazing. "So, how did you get into hacking?" Molly was chewing on a strand of hair. "What?" She spat out the hair. It stuck to her lip. She batted it away. "Oh, I got kicked out of medical school for hypnotizing the niece of an archbishop." She spun in her chair and clacked some buttons that did something to some flashing lights. She looked up. "Words of the wise. Don't do that if going to a Catholic medical school. Apparently hypnotism exposes the soul to demons? Who knew?" She reached up and adjusted a metal wire that was pointed right. She turned it left. "I hacked their computer to see what they'd written on my transcript and thought, people. Why would I want a job that deals with people?" She turned a dial. "But machines..." She smiled at the roof. "Bessie will never let me down. I built everything in here." John nodded. "So, everyone on the team was a genius but him." "Right. Good. That's good." John waited in the van. He watched Sherlock and Irene. He watched Irene and Sherlock. He wondered what he was doing with his life. He had gone to medical school. He'd worked in some of the most harrowing places in the world. He'd helped people. He tried to write, but it came out all weeping characters that brooded over their lives. After all, he had no reason to resent Sherlock and Irene. He and Sherlock weren't in a committed relationship. Sherlock certainly hadn't said anything. John wouldn't say anything. This was better anyway. Watching Irene lean up to kiss Sherlock, curl into his lap, whisper in his ear, smile at John. Her smile wasn't cracked. John could be an adult about this. He could. It was fine. It was all fine. No reason to feel flat or dull over anything. On the sign of 4+1 job, there were river chases and gun battles, and dueling attempts to recover treasure. After all of that, their client, Mary Morstan, thanked them. John smiled to himself and thought that in another life, Barry was the sort of alpha he'd always thought he'd settle down and have children with, but right now, he was just as happy not to settle for the give and take of a relationship. Because he was fine. His life was unreal with amazement. After that smile, Sherlock draped himself over John and said, "We've helped you. Why are you still here?" After the sign of 4+1 job, Sherlock dragged John off to practice climbing walls. John was frankly crap at it. But that was fine. His life was amazing. Because, And then there was this part of his off-the-rails life that was full of amazing sex. He'd studied one true pair bonding. He understood the chemistry of it. He knew the genetics behind it. He'd written novels full of the romance of it. Now he was part of the chemistry of it. Even understanding every aspect didn't make it any less incredible. Really, John hadn't been this skin-hungry, this scent-hungry, this sex-crazed since he was in his teens. Back then, the fear of being called the school breeder had kept him from wanking or fingering himself. He'd been too afraid a turnip would break off. As it turned out, a valid fear. After his parents got religion, neither he or Harry were allowed to buy toys. By the time he'd gotten to uni, he'd dated. He'd been sober. He'd been reliable. He'd been focused. When he'd been in relationships, he'd worried about what he should or shouldn't enjoy. Now it hardly seemed to matter. Sherlock would glare at John and say, "Stop trying to withhold things. I always find them out." He always did. It felt incredibly good to be known by someone and still be wanted. Sherlock didn't care about should or shouldn't. Since he'd made the discovery that sex felt good, he was going at the whole process with exhaustive scientific determination. Downloaded the Cosmopolitan's Kama Sutra, declared the life lesson sections boring, and proceeded to act as if John could fold himself into a pretzel, just because Sherlock could. It was certainly a revelation how good sex could be outside of a proper relationship. In a relationship, he had to worry. Relationships were work. He had to work. This was easy. Sherlock continually ran off and forgot him. He told John all the things he'd done wrong. John told Sherlock where he'd been a bit not good. It was easy. He'd ruined every relationship he'd ever been in, running towards danger. That wasn't even possible with Sherlock. On the Valley of Unease job, Sherlock winked and said, "It could be dangerous." John followed all the way down the side of a skyscraper in Dubai. He was crap at it. He was crap at code-breaking, too. Mazed and exhilarated at being utter crap. He was certain that once Sherlock worked his way through whatever baseline set of experiments he was doing, he'd declare himself bored and move on. Watching Sherlock and Irene, he knew where that next jump would be. John could be fine with it. Right. Yeah. He could be fine with it. He told himself to be realistic. He didn't actually have anything, so when he lost it, he'd be losing something he hadn't had to begin with, and that would be fine. Right. It would all be fine. He might write romances when his characters weren't too depressed to get off the couch, but he knew he didn't live in one. Splendid creatures from the bottom of the sea or descending from genius clouds on high weren't meant for the likes of John. He started obsessing about all the things he'd wanted to ask for. The wonderful thing about Sherlock was he didn't even have to ask. John would be reading about autoimmune disorders, and because his skin hungry as he was, everything made him think about sex. He'd think to himself that Omega's never topped. Sherlock, hanging upside down from a hook on the ceiling in a straitjacket, said in that voice of his, "Really, John, that could be interesting. Certainly, scientifically valid to try both." That was only mildly embarrassing. He tried not to obsess about what he wanted, and wanting to obsess on it. He started obsessing about all the things he wanted to ask for. The wonderful thing about Sherlock was he didn't even have to ask. John would be reading about autoimmune disorders, and because his skin hungry as he was, everything made him think about sex. He'd think to himself, but Omega's never topped. Sherlock, hanging upside down from a hook on the ceiling in a straitjacket, said in that voice of his, "Really, John, that could be interesting. Certainly, scientifically valid to try both." That was only mildly embarrassing. He tried not to obsess about what he wanted, and wanting to obsess on it. John had heard other Omegas talk about it. Marking behavior. Being marked by an alpha. But everyone knew it was the sort of thing that unbonded Omegas shouldn't get up to. He had studied it in uni, where medical terms stripped it of its illicit appeal. John had always laughed off marking instincts as sadomasochistic shite. It had never played a part in any of his relationships with former partners. This wasn't a relationship. It might be fine. A degrading stereotype for Omegas. He'd never written it in a single story, although he'd been asked by more than one editor. Maybe a little biting, but never anything like what he was fantasizing about. He sat with Sherlock late at night, after everyone had left. He was struggling to learn whatever lesson Sherlock thought he needed to know for today's job. He wanted him to learn to be a South African for some reason. That's not what John was thinking about, though. He was focusing on not fantasizing about it. It was embarrassing, really. He didn't even like to think about marking behavior. He didn't even really like to think about being marked by Sherlock. Around Sherlock. His lack of thinking interfered. He made mistakes. He'd hold his breath and wait for Sherlock's reactions. Sherlock called him an idiot, a moron, and normal. He tugged his hair and paced around John. He leaned forward, his hands on both sides of John. He growled in his ear before whirling away again. John didn't want to suggest it. He licked his lips. Sherlock said, "What? What remark of genius do you have to share with me now, John? Do share." John's face flushed. He shifted in his chair.
I wasn't thinking.
Manifestly.
Sherlock's eyes could see everything. He was staring at John.
John flushed a little more. He hardened at the thought of what he wasn't going to say. He couldn't help a little jerking gesture of the thing he couldn't ask for.
Sherlock stopped. His pupils dilated. There was a faint flush on his cheeks.
"Oh, John, you must learn to stop withholding."
He ran. There was a stumbling sound on the stairs as Sherlock tripped in his haste to go up to his room.
John was still trying to decide what he was supposed to do when Sherlock rushed back into the office, had John's trousers and pants down around his ankles, and folded him over the arm of the couch. John blinked at the speed of it. His half-hard cock was mashed into the couch arm. The rough fabric rubbed against it as he shifted. Sherlock was a warm, dark presence behind him. The looped tip of his crop traced over John's bare thighs.
8 strokes.
The first stroke was a feather-like tease across his skin. His skin tightened in response.
1 for every day.
The second was harder. It stung over the curve of his bare arse, a mingled pain and pleasure of endorphins that you have withheld. A third whipped across his thighs, this marvelous idea. The fourth was even harder. It almost pulled a gasp from him. The fifth was a little vicious. It was hard enough to raise a welt. John bit his lips to hold back a whimper. It hurt, and that ought to be wrong. He shouldn't be squirming against the couch, his cock hard and throbbing. You have been withholding from me. The sixth crossed the fifth and was just as hard.
You're trying to do it now.
Sherlock's hands slid over his back, pushing up his sweater to reveal the bare skin to the air. He was wearing leather gloves. John suppressed another whimper. He heard Sherlock's inhale behind him. He had no idea how Sherlock had divined John's fantasy about Sherlock's gloves. He probably saw it in the air over John's head every time he put the damn things on. A seventh fell across his back in a swift strike.
Stop trying to hide from me.
Sherlock's hand traced along the line of the welt.
You cannot.
An eighth.
I can always tell.
A ninth. You said 8 strokes. John looked up. He swallowed. Sherlock had opened his flies. He was holding his erect cock in his hand. The skin over his glands was red and tight. There was a single pearl of precum beaded there. John licked his lips. Sherlock ran his fingers idly up and down the length of his cock. Another stroke. This one as light as the first.
I'm a sociopath. I've decided to count the number of times you've tried to remain silent.
His gloved fingers grazed along the curve of John's lower lip.
2 by the state of your lips.
His cock brushed the side of John's face. Sherlock's gloved hand was still moving slowly up and down its length.
John's mouth watered.
He wanted. He couldn't have said if he wanted Sherlock's fingers or his cock in that moment in his mouth. He wanted both. He swayed slightly. He kept his head turned painfully up. He bit his lip and waited. Sherlock's eyes narrowed. Make that three. Sherlock walked around behind him. The tip of the crop trailed along his bare skin, following Sherlock's hand. Now, would you like an even dozen? Or would you like to remove my gloves? His hand slid around the curve of John's arse. Waves of warmth in the tenderized skin. With your teeth. John swallowed. He wanted everything. He whispered because he'd been doing it all day. As you wish. He waited. Sherlock bent down. Both it is. John expected him to hurry the last two strokes, but he didn't. Sherlock explored John with his gloved hands. He traced each line that he had placed on John. The cool leather slid over John's tightening skin. He placed an index finger between John's teeth. John gently bent down on the leather. Sherlock pulled his hand free of the glove. He brushed his fingers back over John's lips. The crop came down on his back as John licked his fingers clean. Unable to stop himself, John bit down. Sherlock groaned. That's an entirely different experiment, John. Another stroke. What do I have to do to get you to focus?
I can focus.
John turned his head slightly and brushed his cheek along Sherlock's cock. His eyes were closed. If he couldn't see Sherlock seeing him, then maybe. Another sharp stroke down his spine. You're not focusing. John opened his eyes. He focused. He rubbed his cheek along Sherlock's thigh. He breathed in deeply, this area of the body, along with the carotid and under the arms, had the greatest concentration of glands emitting pheromones. He thought about medical school, how thin the membranes of his lips were, how easily the oils on Sherlock's skin, which made them such an excellent biological match, permeated the skin there and entered John's bloodstream. John had spent a lifetime around addiction. He knew what it looked like. He held himself open to Sherlock's gaze as he licked a long line along the side of Sherlock's cock. It bobbed with the force of his tongue. John's hands were flat on the couch, supporting him. He played with Sherlock's cock. With his lips and tongue, Sherlock, clever Sherlock, moved under the couch to better adjust for his greater height. John mouthed his way forward to the base. He licked at the ridge of what, during heat, would be Sherlock's knot. At the base, there was a dense concentration of scent glands. He tasted them. Sherlock, half bent over him, moved the tip of the writing crop in circles on his back. Then Sherlock, with his long, long arms, tipped the writing crop down through his legs. The tip brushed along his cock. John breathed in all those wonderful pheromones in a gasp. He swallowed Sherlock's tip into his mouth. As he tasted the bitter salt of him, Sherlock shuddered. His gloved hand brushed John's cheek. Very good, John. Sherlock's voice was particularly deep now. Continue. The writing crop teased John's cock. He widened his legs to give Sherlock better access with the writing crop. It teased him more. John explored with his lips and tongue. He grazed with his teeth, which earned him a hiss. He swallowed deeper and sucked until he was dripping along the sides of his mouth. He pulled away. He tasted more bitter pre-cum. The taste was a factor of Sherlock's diet, which was appalling. But it also contained concentrations of the base chemicals of Sherlock's scent that mingled with John's saliva, which was full of John's own chemical nature. OTPB in its most basic form. Nature's formula to say, fuck this one. He whispered, this is your magic healing cock. He laughed at his biological joke. He felt so comfortable saying that. He swallowed even the idea of embarrassment as he sucked Sherlock in and out of his mouth. Sherlock said, John, I'm going to... The writing crop fell to the floor. Sherlock gripped John's shoulders with his hands. He was still wearing one glove. John pulled away until only Sherlock's glands were still in his mouth. Sherlock shuddered and came. John swallowed, cum dripping down his cheeks with saliva. Sherlock collapsed on the couch. He stared at John. You. Later, he insisted on applying antiseptic cream to the welts on John's back. After a while, he said, John, my phallus is neither magical nor healing. John laughed. It was such an easy and free laugh. He fell off the couch. He lay on the floor laughing. His own cock was still hard, and this was so easy. Sherlock demonstrated how he could make John come with just the tip of the writing crop. After that, lessons were significantly less productive, were equally significantly more enjoyable. Of course, after, John had to clean the couch. Frequently. It wasn't the main room, after all. Unfortunately, Sherlock wasn't the only one who could read John. John was surrounded by people who knew what he was thinking before he did. Mycroft looked at the couch and said, Really, John? John shifted uncomfortably. Irene cleared her throat. Sherlock, the git, who had just discovered sex was fun, beamed. Mycroft was really the worst, though. He sometimes looked at John as if he was waiting for something. John had no idea what. All John could think was, perhaps it was when John's cycle came due. He told himself it was only natural that he think about his next heat. He shifted a bit. He was half hard thinking about it. He looked at himself in the mirror. You, John Watson, are a complete tart. Proper omegas lie back and think about repopulating England. That had been a big theme in half the Lost Generation classics that he'd ignored in school. It was also the source of all that breed-me shite in romances, because that was what was thrilling to an omega, randomly getting knotted up. Right. He looked at himself in the mirror. His reflection didn't tell him anything. He reluctantly left the Uniloo and went back to what he was doing, which was keeping the restaurant's cook busy with obscure requests. It was in that frame of mind that he pulled his MSF monitor out of his duffel and slid it onto his wrist. He hadn't had it on for God knows how long. It didn't go with half the people he was being. He hadn't even remotely been keeping track of his cycle. Life on the run with criminals had done what getting shot hadn't. It had broken a lifetime of discipline. After a few minutes, the stones shifted into a sort of deep purple. Not a color he'd ever seen them before. The manual had been lost about 5 minutes after he'd been issued the monitor. He struggled with the controls. For once, the damn thing worked. He read the message in disbelief. It told him that based on his chironic gonadotropin levels, he needed to report to his supervisor at the MSF that he was reaching the end of his first trimester and would need to be placed on desk rotations. Congratulations! His watch congratulated him on being a moron. He did the math and couldn't even believe he'd been so stupid. He was a doctor, for fuck's sake. He'd known the numbers. Pregnancy was a possibility in 16% of induced heats. He'd waved it off as a statistically insignificant number because he'd wanted to. Because he hadn't wanted to end that encounter with vomiting and bleeding for an insignificant 16%. Insignificant. He even knew the signs, which he and Sherlock had exhibited right down the chart. He might have skipped morning sickness, so had his mom. They'd had the intensified sexual urges, meant to cause the alpha and omega to form a pair bond. There had been the increased dermal and heat sensitivity.
John's mood swings between euphoria and dull gray.
Even the marking behavior. John rubbed his face. That explained Mycroft's looks. Mycroft had known before John did. John's monitor had known before John did. And what if this was it? His chance to finally settle down. His chance to be an adult. Working for almost 20 years, helping people, hadn't made him an adult. As far as the world was concerned, he'd been a child all his life. Until he had one of his own. He was having a child. The phrase bubbled up in his head, giving a hostage to fortune. He wrapped his arms around himself and considered what he had to do next, which at the moment was pretend nothing was wrong, while some part of himself gibbered that it wasn't ready for this all to be over, because Sherlock was brilliant. But he shouldn't be anywhere near a child. John's current lifestyle was dangerous. There was no more time for fucking around. It was time to be responsible. The voice kept gibbering. John tamped it down and resolved to be reasonable and rational. He would do so tomorrow, or possibly the day after that.